Mark Carney built his brand on green finance, the central banker who'd saved the planet with spreadsheets. Now, he's the prime minister scrapping Canada's carbon tax and fast-tracking oil exports. Gas prices dropped almost 15 cents a liter overnight when the consumer carbon tax vanished in April 2025, from about 155 down to 143 per liter on average. Meanwhile, the service economy, where 4 out of 5 Canadians actually work, is in freefall. In September, Canada's services PMI sank to 46.3, the 10th straight month of contraction. Anything under 50 means the sector's shrinking. So not great. Jobs are being cut, backlogs are disappearing, and optimism's hanging by a thread. So today, has Carney pivoted out of necessity, or has the former climate crusader gone full throttle on political survival?
Welcome to Politics is Broken with Brittle Starr and Lisa B. Canadian and global politics unspun. Are you sitting comfortably? Good. Then we'll begin.
Hi there. Welcome to Politics is Broken. My name is Brittle Starr.
My name is Lisa. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. God, it's the afternoon. Lisa.
We're
different time zones.
We're different time zones. Like, we're usually really separated. Different times.
Yeah. Mentally, we're usually separated. Chronologically, we're usually separated. You're, of course, at home in Alberta.
I am
coming to the listeners today from Abbey Road Studios, where we had, as I told Lisa before we started recording, an assistant engineer had to set up the microphone for us.
It's always a flex with you, eh?
That's all I got. Oh, yes. And then, of course, Owen, our producer, of course, is here with me doing some work on another podcast production. And he's reminding me that the room I'm in right now, I'm in the front room studio at Abbey Road.
Yeah.
It's the same room that Mark Ronson, the producer, mm-hmm. and Ryan Gosling did the vocal tracking for I'm Just Ken.
No.
Yeah. Isn't that wild?
Wow.
See, now you're impressed.
I'll give it to you.
I gotta find the right angle to impress
you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Because you're not easily impressed.
Well, you know, I take everything in stride.
Yeah.
But it's pretty impressive. I'll give you that.
Well, there you go. That's all I wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. I was fishing for it and I reeled one in. That's all that matters.
Just patting you on the back.
Exactly. So that's I'm coming from live today, which is exciting. It's great to be here. It's my third day here in this trip and it's just a fun place to be. It's really cool. I've gone on at length about it before, and I will go on again if you want.
Does it have energy? Like when you go in there?
It does. We were just saying because there's actually studio. We're in the front room studio. Downstairs is Studio 2 and Studio 1. Studio 1 is where they recorded the Indiana Jones theme, Star Wars theme, like all the big orchestral themes. Those were recorded. Studio 2, of course, being the Beatles studio, where all the Beatles stuff was recorded. And Owen was saying today that he was standing outside as a band was just getting ready to record in Studio 2. And he said, I don't know if there's something special about the room or what it is, but I mean, it just sounds really great. It just sounds really good.
Right.
It's a cool place. It's a very, very cool place. It's awesome. Nice. Is it overkill for a podcast? Is it overkill for our podcast more specifically? Yes. Yes, it is. It absolutely is.
We've always been a little extra, so it's okay. It's okay.
We're fancy.
Yeah. I think
we're fancy. That's the thing.
But relatable.
Yeah, exactly. So how have you been?
Good. Lots going on everywhere. So, you know, trying to keep up on all that, which is impossible. But other than that, I'm doing great.
Yeah, we got some strike fun happening in Alberta. And
always.
We'll touch on that a little bit later. We're going to talk about the carbon tax and climate crusading and all that kind of stuff. All these sort of stuff we sort of felt was probably going to be in safe hands with Mark Carney. And now some people are starting to ask, is it though? Is
what
it?
What the hell is going on?
There's a little bit of a fear of that Mark Carney is essentially going to sell us down the river, figuratively and literally. But in the name of, survival, in a sense, really. Mm-hmm. What's your take on Carney in general, like in that regard, in regards to green initiatives, climate change, and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I mean, he's still standing firm when it comes to pipelines and all the bills that Danny wants to get rid of. I'm sure there's conversations happening in the back end. I just don't want it to be like, I feel like, you know, when the election happened and, you know, we know his history and all these kinds of things, but I don't really know that we banked on a lot of the American garbage happening where we would have to kind of reevaluate where we are. And I don't want to keep doing that. Maybe it's for a greater good. But I think it's reasonable to start questioning some stuff, right? Like we said in one of our other shows that, you know, we need to have some transparency on where things are going for people to kind of keep buying into a lot of stuff. But we'll see. I think there has to be a balance. But I don't know.
That seems to be a common take for you and I currently in the political environment is.
I mean, there's things that we know for sure. And then there's things where it's like, it's just a little bit out of our grasp to fully understand everything. Mm-hmm. We know how it feels, right? And right now it just kind of feels fuzzy about what's going on in the direction.
Have you given up on the whole greater good aspect of it? Because it was initially sold to us the idea of, listen, we're going to have, because of the threats of annexation, the 51st state stuff from Trump, from the tariffs, it's all the kind of situation from the U.S., that there's going to be, we've entered a situation where we have to do things we wouldn't choose to do, but we're doing them for the greater good. We're doing them because they have the least amount of negative impact on Canada. Mm-hmm. Do we still buy that?
I'm trying to measure things always, but certainly as of late, in doing a comparison, where we are with Carney, where we might have been with Poilievre, and I always just think we would be stars and stripes right now if we were with Poilievre. Yeah. So in my mind, we're still ahead of the game. But again, I think it's okay to critique or question, because that's how we move forward, right? That's how we get some answers. I still think we're in a better place than we would have been if the horrible had have happened, but But, you know, we've been living with this now, these threats from the U.S. and all this, like, we're tariffing, we're not tariffing, we're going to tariff this. We've been living with that for quite some time, that it's hard to sustain optimism, maybe, you know, sometimes. Yeah. And that's okay. Everybody has a day, right? But we'll see. I mean, there's the stuff happening between us and other countries, and then there's the stuff within Canada. And I think it's equally as tumultuous, just on a different level.
Well, let's go back a little bit to April. Of course, back on April 1st, 2025, Ottawa removed the federal consumer carbon tax, the one applied to gasoline, heating fuel, and natural gas. And of course, as everyone will probably remember, when Trudeau was still prime minister, it was a real sticking point. It was the one thing that the Conservatives hung on to, the one thing that the Trudeau haters hung on to. And when Carney decided, or the government decided to get rid of it, I was kind of a mixed feelings. I was kind of like, it seemed like the best possible. And as far as environmentalists had said, as far as I believe some oil companies had said as well, like, this is the best way for everyone to transition to greener energy, essentially greener fuel. And the industrial carbon price stayed. $95 per ton or for big emitters, and still heading up to $170 by 2030 under the old benchmark. It was a frustrating thing for me because I thought this seems like a really good idea, and it's really just it was almost like a populist change, nothing but that.
Mm. Well, I mean, we know that was the rhetoric that we had heard for so long. The climate, axe the tax. I haven't noticed a difference. I do miss my $225 quarterly check or whatever it was. But I haven't noticed a difference in like the reduction of how much I'm spending for electricity in Alberta, right? So I think it was, you know, olive branch, because it was such a sticking point for so many people, that the Liberals said, hey, here you go. We'll stop what you've asked us to stop for the last 2 years. You're getting what you want. Mm-hmm. Now, as opposed to what Poilievre has always said, is it's going to bring down this cost and food's going to be cheaper and everything. Well, it didn't.
Yeah.
Right? Because it wasn't the sole reason for increases to things. And so maybe that was kind of a backwards way of Carney saying, all right, you want it, here you go, you're going to get it, but nothing really is going to change. You're not in your day-to-day going to feel it. And I know I haven't felt it. I don't know about you.
What's the price of gas per liter in Alberta currently?
Oh, I think it's $139.
Yeah, which is the same in Ontario. At least when I left Ontario last week, it was the same price. Is that 139 ish, roughly?
Okay, but we make it here.
Yes,
it should be 80 cents.
Yeah, you don't even have provincial sales tax in Alberta.
No, that's what Danny's been saying a lot lately, which makes me think, are we going to have provincial sales tax at some point? No, but there's the provincial tax, right, that's added on. And so when the carbon tax was in effect and all we kept hearing was it's going to go up X number of percent. And it's like, yeah, except the province is also going to match that.
Yeah.
Right? Like if it was such a big deal, maybe don't match it, province. But, you know, that's an Alberta issue.
So, of course, the cut won headlines in Alberta and Atlantic Canada and various other regions that were really unhappy about fuel costs. But the climate math doesn't budge. Cheaper gas today means higher emissions tomorrow, right? There's, of course, that whole argument of like the cheaper gas is, the more people will drive, mm-hmm. the more emissions are, the worse it is for the climate. I mean, you think back to even back in the pandemic days. Gas got down to, I believe, 69 cents in Stratford.
Wow.
A liter. But that was because no one was going anywhere.
Yeah.
And it's like, we have to start selling gas again. We have to start getting people out. And of course, the cheaper it is, more people will start to go out and start driving places and all that kind of thing. So it doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense for, is it sound economic policy or is it just like cheap populism?
Well, I think favors have to be won somewhere, right? And so if right. it's changing something that for most Canadians will impact them daily, maybe that's something to bring people in favor. I don't know, because there's so many different areas of, or they're talking about the energy sector or what have you, where one is dependent on the other. But again, we have like the external pressures from outside of Canada, as well as the internal pressures within Canada. And I just, you know, there's the 2030 timeline, which we've also been hearing about, which clearly TikTok, we're not anywhere near that. Right. And so I think realistically things have to be kind of rejigged for it to be reasonable and relatable, because I don't think it's relatable when we're talking about, you know, 2030 and everything that has to be done. There's no way that it can get done. There's a lot that can get done. There's a lot of ways that we can reduce emissions. We can do a whole bunch of stuff. But again, it has to be relatable to people. And I think we've gone away from trying to relate it to the everyday person. And I'm not saying it's on the backs of everyday Canadians, because it's certainly on the backs of industry more than everyday Canadians. But
sure,
we all play a part, right? It's all intertwined.
I want to go over to Alberta. Mm. Who doesn't? Mm. Who doesn't want to go over to Alberta? It's beautiful in Alberta.
We have no sales tax.
No sales tax. You got mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Wild Rose beer is good.
Sure.
That's a good beer.
Mm-hmm.
Fine beer. Yeah, I want to talk about Alberta, because Alberta is interesting, because as you said, you make it there. Mm-hmm. Like this is a huge part of Alberta's economy, of course. Alberta's economy still depends on oil and gas for over 25% of provincial GDP, which is actually lower than I thought. And its government has made deregulation its rallying cry. Premier Daniel Smith publicly called Ottawa's climate plan a war on our prosperity. End quote. Carney's pivot is her victory lap. The Fraser Institute outlined the wish list. I know it's your favorite. You love the Fraser Institute. You're always quoting. You're like, hey guys, listen, I got a cool point at the Fraser Institute.
Yeah, on my arm.
Yeah, exactly. The Fraser Institute, not Fraser, the TV show, which would be an institute I would follow briefly. Actually, he's a bit of a Trump supporter, isn't he?
Oh, he's a total Trump supporter.
Oh, well, we'd have to double peer review his reports, probably. I'd go to the Niles Institute.
The Niles Institute.
Yeah.
What was the dog's name?
Eddie Institute. Yeah. We'll do that instead. The Fraser Institute outlined the wish list, scrap the emissions cap, loosen methane new rules, green light new pipelines, and Carney's ticking boxes fast. So he's going through it and making friends. There's a couple things here. Is Carney, can you argue that Carney is doing the right thing by trying to appease that part, that 25% of the province's GDP? Is he doing the right thing by that? Like, there's so much money involved. There's so many livelihoods involved, and I'm not interested in taking anyone's livelihood away whatsoever. No. But to me, at the same time, I've often thought, you know, Alberta could be a green energy giant in the world, I think. But I just feel like they just never want it. They just think that, well, there's still oil. It's oil and gas. We're fine.
Yeah. Well, that, I mean, Danielle Smith put the moratorium on green energy, right? So wind and solar. Last year,
which is
the
year before,
which is bonkers to me, right? We lost billions in investment. Yeah. And it's goes against what she says now, is that if we don't increase oil and gas, LNG, all those other kinds of things, we're going to lose investors. It's like, well, you're okay with that when it was green energy. I think Alberta has always had a problem with balance and understanding that it's okay to balance more than one thing. You don't have to give everything to your favorite child. You know what I mean? Like you can spread it out amongst the other kids. But in the last 6 months, 6 to 9 months, there's been a real push. You know, Danny with the tanker ban and the emissions ban and all those other kinds of things where she's saying it's an energy cap. And yes and no, because if we were to make it better, even though, you know, we have the cleanest energy, we have cleanest oil in the whole world. But it could always be better, right? Like, sure, it's maybe the cleanest, but the fallout of that isn't so clean. So, I mean, she's pushing this to have, like, everything just lifted so it's like a free-for-all. And, you know, she announced this latest pipeline initiative because apparently the Fed said that they wouldn't consider anything unless there was, oh, shit, now I'm not going to remember the word. Is it proponent? I can't remember, whatever it was, to start like the process of investment, right?
Right.
For them to consider lifting or I guess reviewing some of the bills. So Danny's like, okay, well, we're just going to take $14 million and do it ourselves. And so she's putting it out into the world as like, this is our pipeline push, right? And David Eby's like, nuh-uh. Like, nuh-uh. You have to come through us in order for this to happen. And like, there's actually no plan, but it's being proposed as if there's this giant plan and investors are just chomping at the bit to come in here. And all that needs to happen is Carney needs to just lift some of that legislation. Yeah.
Just thinking of pipelines and stuff as heading to the West Coast from Alberta. Mm-hmm. Was it Scott Moe who said recently a point that I kind of went, well, he's kind of right. Saying there's no BC coastline. There's a Canadian coastline.
Well, and that's, yes. Yes.
How do we feel about that?
I get it on both sides, right? Obviously, the coasts of Canada, the three, are important for import, export, all the things that we need for Canada to sustain itself. Mm-hmm. However, I don't think that gives just carte blanche to do whatever you want to get to that coastline, right? And so I think this is where EB's like saying, like, there's things that we have to protect, right? Mm-hmm. So like with the tanker ban and things like that, like that's a means of protecting BC's coastline because, again, that also brings revenue into Canada, right? With tourism and all sorts of things. So it's not just like a gateway for like oil and things like that to come and go and you just happen to be in our way. So we're just going to drill, baby, drill, right? Which is kind of how it's sounding like Danielle's putting it forward. But I get where Eby's coming from, but I get the fact that, you know, we sometimes have to forget the borders, right? If we really want.
Yeah.
It was that whole thing about, you know, why did we never really consider interprovincial? Like we were so focused on sending things to the U.S. Why didn't we ever really consider moving things between provinces and doing it that way, right? So I think a lot of the stuff that's happened in the last, where are we now, 10 months, is making us rethink some of the things that we thought. And because of that, we're going to have to change what the plans were, right, in order to meet that, because it's not the same as it was 2 years ago.
I think the interprovincial trade thing is a really good point. And that's kind of the weird position we're at currently, is in the threat of whether or not anyone takes it seriously or not. It could, I mean, there's no reason to not think it could cause us problems. Mm-hmm. Threat of annexation. from the U.S., it's you start to think, well, wait a minute, we have to stop fighting with each other. We have to stop. We have to start working together because we are. It's a massive piece of land mm-hmm. this country's on, and we have a decent chunk of population, not quite as big as the U.K., but almost. And we need to start working together. And I remember being shocked at finding out that you couldn't, for example, get wine. And we'd be in BC and be like, this is an amazing bottle of wine. Let's get this when we get back to Ontario. No, you can't get mm-hmm. it in Ontario.
No.
Which is insanity, which is craziness. But you could get it probably anywhere in the U.S., which is just craziness.
Right.
It almost speaks to a Canadian-ness, right? It speaks to a little bit of a Canadian thing. I was talking to a fella in Glasgow when I was there last week when we did the show, and talking about how Canada and Scotland are similar in media because, Scotland is about 5 or 6 million people mm-hmm. compared to 40-some million people in England, and Scotland's very much an underdog, and they kind of use that to their advantage and also use it as it's also a disadvantage. And he said it's something called the Scottish cringe, which basically says, we're not quite as good. You know, mm-hmm. we need England. We really need England. And to a large extent, Scotland does need England. There's lots of SNP people who are really upset right now. economically, it makes, like, why wouldn't you? You're right next to each other. You should get along. You should open trade and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's that idea of the Canadian aspect of we have to trade with somebody else. We trade with the U.S. if we want to be legitimate. Let's not even think about trading with other provinces, mm-hmm. which is insanity, which is just absolutely crazy. I wanted to go back to something you had said about Alberta, saying how Alberta is always hesitant to spread it around, which mm-hmm. I think is funny because mm-hmm. it sounds filthy.
I know, right?
But also... but at the same time, it's also interesting because, like, why is that? Because does that number seem right to the 25%? I'm shocked.
Like, it feels like more. Way more. I mean, it's the only thing that we hear about. I mean, there's other obviously industry in Alberta, but really since the beginning of time, since they tapped their first well, that's been the identity for Alberta, right?
Yeah.
And so much. Pardon the pun, so much energy is put into the energy sector and its importance. And I'm not saying that it's not important, but it can't be the only important thing. You can't mm-hmm. just invest and reinvest and bail out and do all those kinds of things for energy and for oil because, and I know Danny's argument would be if we had pipelines, then we wouldn't see what we always see, but there's always the bust and boom in Alberta. Right. And so mm-hmm. when oil prices are good and things are flowing, we prosper. When oil prices are down, it impacts every other thing in the province because that's the primary source of money. At least that's what Albertans are told. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'll give an example, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point, but like in the teacher strike. Right. And potential it hasn't happened yet. So we have 2 days. The rationale from our finance minister is that we're in an economic hardship. Ironically, we're always in economic hardship when there's bargaining happening. I don't know how
that's
that
so
is.
Weird.
Yeah, I know. Crazy. Yeah. But it's because there's so much investment into one sector. And we are at the whim of how that sector does. Now, would a pipeline help that stability? Oh. Right. Like, I don't know. I'm sure it's going to come with its own problems. Right. But mm-hmm. We aren't the only ones in the world that provide oil. As good as our oil might be, if someone wants cheaper oil, they're going to go somewhere and get cheaper oil. Right. So,
yeah, for sure. Well, we'll just continue. We'll circle back to the strike thing in a second. Yep. But I want to continue with the moving on to the services sector. And I'm understanding services is just like industries that don't make stuff, but provide services, mm-hmm. which makes sense. So not looking great. 10th straight month below 50 on the PMI, which stands for, I'll ask my producer what it stands for again.
Production Management Index.
Purchase Management Index. Look at that. I'll give credit to Owen, but it wasn't Owen that guessed it. Purchasing Managers Index.
Gotta get it right.
I'd never used the term before, no. But I am going to get a tattoo now, though.
I like PMI. It sounds fancier.
It does. It sounds... No, I'm not going to make a joke about that. Never mind. There's no jokes based on that acronym will happen. But the backlog index, whatever that is 42.9, which is the lowest since 2020, which isn't good. Factories are shrinking as well. Deloitte says Canada is going to likely dodge a technical recession, but growth will be under 1% in 2025. RBC Economics projects Alberta growing 2%, Ontario near 0%, Quebec barely positive. Unemployment nationally is 6.5%, up from 5.8% a year ago. So are we in a position again? I'll go back to that idea. Are we in a position where it's like, we don't have time to really like, is there a situation where we can be like, we don't have to worry about the climate. We shouldn't worry about the climate thing. It shouldn't be priority in our decision-making. It should be like whatever makes money. So if oil and gas is making money in Alberta, let's go all in on that for right now. Or is that foolhardy? I think it's foolhardy.
You mean we should be more capitalist? Because that's really at the end of the day what it is.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. I mean, but do we have to be more capitalist in order to defend Canada from even more capitalist huge players beside us?
Like this whole, so if this PMI is the lowest it's been since 2020, I'm going to guess that was pre-pandemic. And what the pandemic kind of showed us is that we were not prepared for a pandemic. We were not prepared for crisis, right? And my worry is that we didn't really get a lot of breathing room from quote unquote the end of the pandemic to now this new threat. So like there hasn't been an opportunity, and maybe it wouldn't have mattered, but there hasn't been an opportunity for us to really be able to sit down without worrying about threats from other places to go, how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? How do we safeguard Canadian economy, Canadian industry? How do we do all of that within our walls, right? To make sure that first and foremost, we are supporting Canadians. We didn't get a chance to do that, right? Because we were so busy fighting a pandemic, and then all of a sudden this wackadoo comes around, and now everybody's, you know, there's threats of this and that, and it's instability. And anytime there's instability, there's going to be impacts to a lot of things, right? The work sector, you know, finance, like everything. I'm just hoping we don't try and latch on to what seems to be the it's not going to be quick, but the easiest type of resource that we have in Canada. And I don't want to slam any other province, right? Because Albertans think that we're the most important. and maybe it's just because we hear about oil all the time, right? But I mean, like, that's something that clearly has potential for making money and to support an economy. So if the entirety of Canada is kind of unstable, would Alberta be the ones to bring up the economy? I don't know. I hope not.
And I also don't think they would, to be honest. Okay. I think that's the thing, is that I feel that there's only so many jobs you can add to Alberta in oil and gas. There's a lot of jobs you can add in oil and gas for sure. There's only so many, and it's not going to be enough to, because it seems to me you're restricted by like the physicality of it. It's just, there's only so much you can do. And my concern is things like water, that type of things. Where there's another resource that Canada has. So my concern is that we're in this situation where we have to kind of be realistic. We have to be, and I say realistic, but meaning realistic as in we don't have a lot of options.
Yeah.
And that's a bit concerning, a bit scary. For example, here, we have to do something. We have to do something to protect Canada, to protect our resources at the same time. And that might mean maybe not letting a little bit of the resources go. Maybe that'd be terrible. I think it'd be a horrible idea, but it sort of feels like there's not much option sometimes. Maybe we're just being told that. I'm not sure.
I think in the situations that we're in right now, like, I think it's really important to like have a big old bear hug around our country and make sure that we're keeping as much as we can, right? Like without giving it away. I'm not completely well-versed in how pipelines work. I don't know that they're going to be going through like, you know, downtown Vancouver to get out to the ocean, but
down Robson,
right? Like just out, over the bridge down the, but there's concern, right? And I mean, it's not just concern of like, I mean, like we've got treaty issues and stuff like that. And I know our provincial government is, saying that they've had consultation or discussions, right, with various indigenous groups. And I, but there's a lot to consider because we have so much history. We can't just, you know, start tearing through the forests. We can't, you know, then we have to look at, is it fiscally beneficial? Like if we were to kind of go like up around the borders, so it would have the least amount of impact on various different places. I don't know. Right. Like, to me, it makes sense that we need to have pathways for things to get out, but not at the expense of another province. When Danny was giving a little presser the other day, she said something that, like, it's incumbent, similar to Mo, it's incumbent on other provinces to allow access, right? Basically, that's paraphrasing, which, yes, but not at their own expense, right? Like, you have to protect yourself first. I don't know. And I think everyone's banking on Daddy Carney to basically either say yay or nay. And that's going to, I guess, flip the switch on what's going to happen. But as prime minister, you also have to be cognizant and conscious of every single province and that impact. You can't just like waive any type of like get rid of the emissions cap and get rid of the tanker ban and do all these kinds of things in order to progress one project at the peril of other provinces, you know?
It's a bit of a balancing act, isn't it? It's certainly it is a job that I'm glad I don't have. Like as you mentioned, like the treaty situation, there's lots of moving parts and many different players in Canada, and figuring it out what the best plan of action is to protect those different moving parts and people is very difficult. And I think he's done a decent, I mean, it's all, we have to remind ourselves that it's all essentially spurred on by the goings on south of the border. All this stuff is happening as almost a direct result of the current administration in the US.
Yeah.
And that's frustrating. So I guess it's also probably a bit of a game of waiting it out, or how gambling on how long you can wait something out, and if you can wait something out. Do we honestly think, and I'm asking this as an honest question to both of us, do we honestly think that the US is not just full of crap?
I think the concern is that they're so unpredictable that we don't know.
Right. They may be full of crap, but they don't know it.
Well, no, like they may be full of crap today, but mean it next Tuesday. Do you know what I mean? Like we just don't know because they change their mind or direction, for us at least, on a whim. Sometimes with, I guess, planning, sometimes without planning. But that's the problem, is that because they have such an impact, other countries that are potentially going to be, you know, impacted by their decisions are kind of like leaves on the water. We're like, where do we go, right? Do we focus all our energy here, which leaves us open over here? Or do we just slow everything down and kind of wait and see? And in turn, that does have an impact on industry. It has an impact on lumber, on steel, on oil, on everything, right? You know, I'm not a political expert. I'd be like, fuck it. Like, let's just focus on us. Whatever happens, happens. We'll pull a line out of Mexico, right? And just kind of do what's going to be best for Canada. Understanding that we still have a very close relationship with the US, right? But maybe we need to flex. I don't know.
I sort of feel like that as well. There's a little bit of, you know, in my experience in life, I've come across some people who are very threatening, appear very big, of consequence to my well-being, not just meaning physically, like business-wise. And the majority of those people have turned out to be bluster. It's just been all bark, no bite.
Yeah.
And it's part of their tactic. And there's a little bit of that, but I think you're right. Combine this little bit of that bluster aspect, but it's also combined with the craziness aspect that's distressing to me, because the volatility is, as you said, is like That's the scary part, because you can't necessarily bank on it. Yeah. I think we just have to try to be smarter. But I do appreciate what Carney's done working with other countries like Europe, mm-hmm. and like going to Europe and going to countries there, doing stuff with the UK, doing stuff with Mexico. I think it all seems very smart. Indonesia, mm-hmm. Most recently. I think that's really great. I think it also, I think it's the flex that you're referring to, of Carney saying, listen, you guys figure yourself to the US, you guys figure yourselves out. Once we get figured out, we'll maybe talk to you again. But until then, you know, we'll just start talking to some new friends.
I'm going down the road. And like, you know, Pierre's constantly, he's traveling here, he's traveling there. Yes, he should be. Carney should be traveling. Yeah. And coming up with deals, agreements, understandings with other countries that we may not have always put at the forefront is going to take time, but it may be time that's well spent for the future, right? Because like, again, when you really compress it down to like a schoolyard bully and the gang that goes around the bully, like you can, I wish someone would make a cartoon of it, but like, that's really what, that's really what's happening with the US right now. Except, I don't want to sound ableist, but the bully has not taken their medication, right? And so it's just that, that kind of like, it's not just someone who's, you know, aggressive or violent or what have you. Like there's a lot of stuff behind that. So
a lot of stuff going on for sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's change gears just slightly, just ever so slightly, if we can, to the Alberta situation with the current potential strike. What's happening? So just give us a rundown.
So Alberta teachers have been bargaining for quite some time. They had proposals, I believe, in June, which went out to their membership, and it was voted down, which means it was a no. And so then I believe they entered a process of mediation back at the table with the government representatives. Another offer was presented a few weeks ago, which teachers got to vote on, which is how bargaining works. And once again, it was voted down. So now they're in a situation where they have indicated that October 6th, so Monday, is the day that they will begin strike, you know, unless something magical happens with the provincial government. So
in addition to the impact that's going to have, as you'd expect, for students and families and all that kind of stuff, there's a bit of solidarity with other unions that are going to step in. Do you think, like, how damaging could this potentially be for Alberta?
Well, I mean, unions tend to support other unions, right? So if someone's out on a line, other unions will show up. Teachers aren't actually striking, like there's no picket lines. But yeah, like, I mean, same thing like for postal workers, other unions will show up for postal workers on their line. There's a lot of people bargaining in Alberta right now. There's a lot of different unions, a lot of different sectors. And you know, it's impactful, you know, 40,000 or however many teachers they have right now that are set to not show up Monday morning is impactful. And that's the point of a strike, right? You have to make impact. I've seen people comments are like, why didn't they do this over the summer? Well,
because no impact. Then.
Two reasons. Yeah, there's no impact, but that's not how it works, right? Like they can't just walk off. They can't have an illegal strike. So, but yeah, I mean, there's other unions that are bargaining at this time. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this strike and if the province comes back to the table with potentially more of what the teachers were looking for. And it's not just about money. Let's make that clear. And how that may impact future negotiations for other people that are still in bargaining, right? Like there's a lot of impact that happens when different unions take different deals. So it's going to be interesting. The feedback that I've received from a lot of teachers that have reached out is that like nobody wants to strike, right? It's not like, woohoo, let's go burn some barrels. But they're in a position where they have to strike, right? And it's going to be interesting. I wish them well. I wish this government would give their heads a shake and understand the ramifications of a lot of the things that they have done that have put teachers in this position. It's not just the Alberta Teachers Association. It's not just the teachers that are being greedy, which a lot of people think it is. It's the lack of action of provincial government for decades that have put them in this situation. So
what's your hot take on how it's going to go? Are you willing to give one?
You want me to give like my my guess?
Yeah, like this is going to be a complete shit show, or this is going to be it's going to be I think they're going to come to an understanding or an agreement. I could hear the
internet's
breath,
forever, though. Right? So yeah. If I know, right? We'll scrub the internet clean. It will either go a max of 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
or it will go till Christmas. I'm hoping for the max of 2 weeks because I think at the end of the day, it's public pressure. Yeah. Right. And so all parents who are mad that this is happening or whatever's going on, you need to start sending emails and making phone calls and getting somebody back to the table. That's my worry. It's either going to be super short, which is the goal of a strike, or it's going to be super long.
I want to get another, I'm going to shift gears again before we finish off here. Another hot take that I feel will be much easier for you to give on this.
Oh, damn it.
And I appreciate you letting me lead in this dance today. It's good. Apparently, the U.S. government is minting a Donald Trump $1 coin.
Yeah.
It has a picture of him on the back, much like the Queen or King now in Canada, the U.K., elsewhere, that type of thing. Much like they would have the president on the back of a coin in the U.S. But then it also has another picture of him on the front, giving the, what I can describe only as the black power fist.
I'm sure he would not describe it as that.
Which I'm sure is not what he would describe it as, exactly. What is your hot take on that?
I mean, you couldn't find a bigger narcissist, like, if we tried, currently living. I get it, right? Like, we have the Queen on our money, now the King, eventually. I don't know even if we've started to print.
Yeah, no, I've seen a loony with the King on the back. Yeah, yeah.
So, like, it's not unusual for us to have, like, sitting important people
sure.
on money. Sure. I think it's ridiculous. I'm surprised it's actually, like, formal money and not, like, the crypto bars or whatever the hell it was that he was trying to put out before. Crypto bars. The U.S. right now, unfortunately, is just a big joke. It's just a big punchline.
It is. Yeah. It's a very dangerous joke. Yeah. That's the dangerous part, is that all of it seems hilarious until they tell you you're not allowed to laugh at it anymore.
Maybe because people are error in it. And I know it's not all Americans. And I know it's actually just a small percentage of Americans that are like, rah, rah, rah.
Yeah. And it really is not. It's by no means the majority of Americans are in support of Donald Trump.
And I empathize because I know that, like, in Alberta, like, we're stuck with who we're stuck with. And, you know, not all of us are on that.
If only there was some way they could have had an election where they could have voted him out and not voted him back in the second time.
Look at okay. but when you look at what's happening, and if you have like a modicum of like insight into history, or like even not really history so much as the things that are happening in other countries where it's like that totalitarian, like dictatorship, like, I don't understand how people don't see that that's what's happening.
Yeah.
And the ones that are rah-rahing the most because they don't think it's going to impact them because they are of the same ilk as the blob, it doesn't matter, right? In a totalitarian like dictatorship, it doesn't matter, right? So I don't want the worst case scenario to happen to the U.S. because I think a lot of people are suffering now, but I think far more are going to suffer and realize their mistakes when it's going to be too late.
Yeah. And we've spoken before about how, you know, it's been said that it'll take about another 9 to 10 months from now before the true effects of what's happening will kick in properly. And I remember we spoke to Allison Gill, mm-hmm. her mother, she wrote, and she said something that stuck in my mind where she said, you know, Americans will start to only start to pay attention when it affects their neighbor. Yeah. When they see it happening to their neighbor, that's when they'll start to really be concerned about it. Now, because as again, there's lots of people who are not for the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. And as we said, the majority by no means supports the Trump administration, which makes it a very unusual situation. Yeah. And it's not like the country. This is the thing that drives me insane is that the U.S. globally and to the majority of people outside of the U.S. is being represented by Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And the amount of damage that guy is doing to the country is phenomenal.
Yeah.
But it is weirdly heartening, but also distressing in that, you know, we were talking about a year ago, talking about, oh, well, this is, we're going to be leading into fascism. I even wrote a book, Lessons from Cats for Surviving Fascism.
Insert
and it was like,
here.
That seemed like a, insert exactly. Please go by MagnaCata.com or your favorite bookseller. Yeah, MagnaCata.com. You like that? Thank you. Like Magna Carta, Magna Carta. You see, you understand the joke. Never mind.
No, I get it. Yeah.
The joke. But that's when I did that book, it was like, this is kind of a funny little, huh? Doesn't it seem like things are happening like that?
Mm-hmm.
And then it's becoming a case where you'll see more traditional media pieces being written about it saying, yeah, this is basically fascism.
Yeah.
And lots of notable people saying, yeah, this is just fascism. This is just the beginning stages of fascism. And it's one of those situations where people think, well, fascism means there's a bunch of jackbooted guys, you know, invading towns, and which is kind of happening. But also it's they sort of feel that it affects everybody at once.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't think it's the way it happens.
No.
I think it affects a small group of people. And then all of a sudden you're under their thumb. And my hope is that the U.S. gets their act together for 2026,
yeah.
which is so long from now.
But it's not, because look, we've been dealing with this already for so long. And it just feels like yesterday.
It's only been a week. It's only been a week, Lisa. Okay, it's not been a week. It just, that was the scary part when people would say it's only been a month.
It's right? Like it's only been,
oh my God.
Feels like 2.5 years already.
Yeah, no, it's been you know, 9 months
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. And yeah. so like 2026 is not that far away right now.
No, you're right. You're totally right. Like you give me hope. Very rarely do I turn to you for hope and optimism.
Are you saying I'm a dark cloud? What are you saying?
I'll say you're a pragmatist.
I'm a realist, right? So
exactly.
Yeah, I think people fail to understand that, like you said, it's not just like it's like when it rains, right? It doesn't just all of a sudden dump. Like there's cloud changes, you know, barometric pressure changes. That's what fascism is. It creeps. And mm-hmm. If people from the outside are starting to go, okay, well, that could lead to that, and now we're seeing it actually happen, people need to wake up, because it's not leaders like the Blob who match and mirror other leaders don't want to be leaders for philanthropic reasons. They don't want to do it for to better people that have elected them. They do it for power. And that power transcends people, right? And so now's the time, people. Do what you got to do. Figure it out. Make it go away.
I love the rain analogy because it's exactly what it is. And it seems like right now America's full of still a bunch of people who are sitting outside on the patio having a drink. And they're like, it's fine. It'll pass.
It'll pass.
Don't worry about it. And everyone else is like putting down, you know, the umbrellas. They're like putting the awnings up.
Yeah.
Everyone's like buckling stuff up, making sure it doesn't blow away, roping, tying things down. And they're sitting out there going, it's fine.
It's fine.
It's nothing. It's a couple of drops.
Yeah.
Who cares? Who cares?
It's not going to hit us.
And then all of a sudden they're going to be soaked.
Yeah.
They're going to be actually
yeah.
soaked.
It's going to be tsunami.
Soaked in fascism.
Yeah. Soaked in fascist tsunami.
We're laughing again.
Well,
fascism.
It's laugh or cry, right? So we got to do both. Yeah.
It is. I think you do have to laugh for sure. Yeah. But you have to be laugh and be aware is the hope. Well, listen, so Carney's carbon pivot gave drivers cheaper gas in Alberta a victory lap, but Canada's emissions curve is flat. Its service economy shrinking and the big green banker is now the oil whisperer. Energy might keep the GDP needle twitching for now, but if 4/5 of workers stay stuck in a service slump, the pump relief won't feel like prosperity. This isn't a war between green and black gold. It's a test of whether politics can still balance the books and the planet. There you go. So thanks so much for listening and watching Politics is Broken. And make sure you follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms, on YouTube, all that kind of stuff. And you can come to brittlestar.com and see the video episode there for paid subscribers. And from Abbey Road, this is me. I love me. Yeah, 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 yeah. Take care, everyone. See you next week.
Help me. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Politics is Broken with Brittle Star and Lisa B. The audio version of this podcast is produced by Owen Reynolds for the Podcast is Broken Network. Remember to like, follow, subscribe, and comment. And don't forget to check out BrittleStar.com for more.